school funding has taken a big hit in the federal budget, and state and territory leaders met yesterday and have demanded an urgent COAG meeting with the Prime Minister, as we heard on RM Breakfast this morning. However, the federal budget announced that funding for school chaplains will be maintained at a cost of around $245 million over the next 4 years. The funding, however, will now only go to faith-based chaplains. Under Labor, changes were made to the chaplaincy program, where schools had a choice to apply for the funding under the National School Chaplaincy Program to employ either a religious or a secular student welfare worker. So this is a controversial change to what has been a controversial scheme, and we can tell that because our Facebook page has gone off on this overnight, I have to say. In this time of budget cutbacks, are school chaplains value for money? How does their role compare with or complement school counsellors? Joining us this morning is David Stokes from the Australian Psychological Society and Peter James, who's CEO of the Scripture Union of Queensland. Welcome, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Well, good morning indeed.
Peter, can you describe for us the specific work that chaplains do in schools? Is their role clear-cut?
It's a role that has a number of different facets to it. So in a study that was done in 2009, the role of chaplains was looked at, and on average it was found about half a school chaplain's time is spent providing pastoral care of some kind. That might be unstructured pastoral support for children or structured pastoral support on the referral from a teacher or a school psychologist or guidance officer. So that's about half the role. The other half of the role is spent delivering programs and involved in school programs. So either chaplaincy origin programs, such as self-esteem programs, programs dealing with grief and loss, programs dealing with just social inclusion for children, involving themselves at the school's request in programs the schools are running. So that's a sort of in a nutshell.
That's very, very broad. Where does religion fit into either of those roles? The pastoral care aspect of it, unstructured, and the more formalised programs?
So some of the formal programs do have religious component to them, but those require participation only with consent of, if it's an older child, the child themselves, or if in the younger children's case, the parents and the child. So participation in religious content is voluntary. And in the general pastoral support, it's a matter of being a person available to have conversations of a general nature that can support a child wherever they are spiritually.
Right. The Scripture Union refers to chaplains giving spiritual support or attending to students' spiritual well-being. What do you mean by that in a school setting?
Well, it's important to remember the program is specifically designed to be supportive rather than coercive or manipulative. So there are prohibitions on proselytising, which we take very seriously. And a chaplain is a person who is supportive and encouraging rather than somebody who is trying to change a child's mind about something.
About
religion in particular. So a child will come to a chaplain wherever they happen to be coming from, and the chaplain will support that child regardless of whether they have a faith or no faith, or if they do have a faith, regardless of what particular type of faith that is.
What training do chaplains receive to be able to be considered eligible for working in a school environment? Because there were some criteria placed around their participation in schools in and around 2012, I think.
Yes, so the national standard is Certificate 4 in community work or pastoral care, and that is a function of the role. This is meant to be a role that is encouraging and supportive and social in nature, It's not an in-classroom role per se, teaching particular content. It's somebody who can work well with children and run programs with children and can recognise in a very general sense when there might be something from a mental health perspective that needs referral on to others.
David Stokes from the Australian Psychological Society, when the chaplaincy program was started under the Howard government, continued under the subsequent Labor government, psychologists were critical of the program and of the role of chaplains in schools. Do you still have that critical concern?
Look, our reservations have always been around two major issues: the scarce resources that exist in the school system for specialist services, but also the quality issue and the risk reduction, because children with mental health issues, and these seems to be an increasing population in the schools these days, need expert services, and they're very short on the ground when it comes to these services, and to see money invested in what we see as less qualified individuals in the school setting continues to be an issue of concern.
How do the qualifications compare in terms of counsellors, school counsellors working in the school setting as distinct from chaplains?
Well, school counsellors, if they are psychologists, and many of them are, have to have a tertiary qualification and usually postgraduate qualifications with specialisation in developmental and mental health issues. So, more importantly, they are subject to a national registration scheme whereby they're obliged to stay with a code of ethics, and any variations from that code are a reportable offence.
How do you see the role of a school counsellor in a school environment?
Well, they come with a knowledge of both the child development issues and mental health issues, and are capable of both recognising, identifying and appropriately intervening where a child with a mental health issue is recognised.
So, just thinking about the lay of the land, would most schools have both a counsellor and a chaplain, or is it a case of either or in some schools where you might just have a chaplain and no counsellor?
That would be a worrying situation, because while we respect the chaplaincy program has had benefits in the school, what we're looking for is the capacity for these chaplains to identify individuals who need intervention or assessment and to refer them on. Concerns in the earlier stages particularly was that this wasn't happening, they weren't referring on, and they were crossing the boundary into trying to provide services to mental health students.
Mm. Peter James, CEO of the Scripture Union of Queensland, is that happening? Is that crossing over happening? Because it's certainly, by the sounds of the role that you're allocating chaplains at the top of our discussion, it crosses over into the school counsellor role in all sorts of ways, it strikes me.
I think it depends on an understanding of what the spectrum of mental health intervention is. So at one end of the spectrum, you have a range of activities that that promote protective factors in mental health, and some of those come out in the programs that we run. So, for example, programs that deal with family breakdown and grief and loss or self-esteem. Now, they are programs that have either been designed by psychologists or psychiatrists, for that matter, but they don't need to be necessarily delivered by those people.
But why do they need to be delivered by a person who has a religious focus, when a lot of students in schools don't identify as religious, or they come from a a diverse range of different faiths? Why give primacy to a chaplain in that role?
Well, you're right. Many of those programs don't have to be delivered by a religious person, but some of them do touch on issues of spirituality, and that's where a chaplain has an extra tool in his or her bag, so to speak. So there are some topics that lead into discussions initiated by the child where they have questions about spirituality, and the chaplain is a person who's trained and able to deal with that.
Isn't that better placed happening in the community where the family can access a chaplain through their church rather than at a school? Isn't this confusing some of the boundaries here?
I don't think it is, because when you think about the role of a chaplain as a supportive person, they can provide, not only can they operate the program, but they can provide general support for the child. So take a child who is not necessarily depressed, but who is just lonely. Do we want to put money, and this is really a debate about whether you put money into primary care, or secondary care, or tertiary care. So if we have a system of programs that are designed and critiqued carefully by psychologists and psychiatrists, they can be delivered at a level of qualification less than that. I should say too, though, that a very large number of chaplains have got graduate and postgraduate qualifications, even though the national standard is for a certificate of 4.
David Stokes, your response to Peter's comments?
Well, look, we were very happy with a process where there was an integrated set of services. Our concern is always those boundary-crossing occasions. Can I also just say that perhaps it's helpful to understand that special services in schools, which include psychology and counsellors, are funded by the state governments. This initiative has obviously come straight from the Commonwealth, and it's really difficult to find the resources for the specialist services in the schools already, and after the recent budget it's even going to be tighter. It's then difficult to say, do we have enough of both services, if you like, and that's one of the inequalities that we're concerned about.
Another change with this particular rollout of money over the next 4 years is that under the last government, I think in recognition of the controversy around this, schools were able to use this federal money, to apply to use this federal money for a secular welfare worker or a faith-based chaplain. That will no longer be the case. The money will be only allocated to those who want to apply for a chaplain. How do you feel about that?
That's a source of great concern to us too. I mean, we were somewhat critical of the recent government, the Garrett principles, perhaps we might describe them as, not going far enough. But in comparison with what's recently been released, the Garrett principles looked particularly good.
Peter James from the Scripture Union, how do you view the current rollout, where it will only fund faith-based chaplains now? The schools will not have the option to use that funding to apply for money for secular workers.
Well, the program was originally conceived as a chaplaincy program. There have been two studies now, one by the Vulnerable Children and Families Research Centre at University of Western Australia, the other by the Department of Psychology and Social Services at Edith Cowan, both of which looked at the chaplaincy service.
So those are independent, is that independent research?
Well, it was commissioned research, but it was by an independent body. So
commissioned by whom?
By chaplaincy providers, either as a collective or as an individual. But they are nevertheless by reputable and independent university and research institutes. But they looked at the chaplaincy program. They did not look at the welfare worker option. So what we do know is that the chaplaincy program has had significant benefits in schools, people who don't have a stake in it, so school staff, principals and teachers, have found that the program, a chaplaincy program, increases student confidence, student self-esteem. It helps people from culturally and linguistically diverse communities. It helps with grief and loss and a range of other things. So that we know the chaplaincy program is a good one. Now, the thing about the budget is that that there was a reduction in the number of places. So there was effectively a 20% reduction in the cost of government in the way the program was announced last week. And what they left in place was the chaplaincy component, which has been proven, at least in two studies, to have a positive impact. impact.
Why does that have to happen, though, through religious means? Cannot all those things be rolled out in things like schools now run positive psychology programs, for example, and other programs that are irreligious but that build the confidence and esteem of young people?
And we're not against any of those things, but the point that we make is that people are not secular. People come to school with a view about their own spirituality, and it's an essential view that goes to the core of who they are. It's an issue of identity. It's also an issue that is a protective factor in mental health terms, and so having a service in schools that supports people, somewhere between 40% and or more of people who have spirituality as an issue they identify as important to them, having a service that will support that can only be positive in protective and promoting mental health.
David Stokes, given that there is a big workload for counsellors working in schools, teachers report increasing numbers of students with all sorts of social and emotional problems and learning disorders. Is this an extra pair of hands, potentially, federally supported?
Absolutely, and we're not opposed to the notion of the pastoral care. I think what we would dispute is that it does it have to be provided by a religious person? Why can't pastoral care be delivered by a range of people? And it gives the schools a chance to choose the sort of orientation they want their pastoral care to take.
Well, look, gentlemen, thank you very much for joining us this morning, and I can't tell you the response that we've had on our Facebook page to this discussion. I guess you are both quite used to that response, and you might like to participate in the conversation yourselves. Thank you for joining us on Life Matters this morning.
Thanks, Natasha.
David Stokes there from the Australian Psychological Society, and Peter James, CEO of the Scripture Union of Queensland. And thank you for your conversation about this. School chaplains and counsellors, what role do they have in schools? Well, yes, you have a look at the Facebook page and see what you think. Our listener feedback line, 02833 1430. And we are on Twitter at RN Life Matters.